little Johnny's in college, and he goes to the bar one night, and he's sitting there and having a few beers, and he notices this lady across from him just smiling. So he buys her a drink, goes on over, and they start talking, and one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, they're going over to her apartment. Well, they start making out and, you know, taking off their clothes, and he pulls his pants off, and she says, "Oh, my gosh, what happened to your knees?" He says, "Well, when I was younger, I got a case of the measles." She says, "Oh, you mean measles?" He said, "No, I mean measles." She doesn't want to say anything, you know. She just wants to keep making out. And so they're still going at it, and he takes off some of her clothes, and then he takes off his socks. And she says, "Oh, my gosh, your toes. What happened to those?" He says, "Well, when I was younger, I caught a case of the tolio." She says, "Oh, you mean polio?" He says, "No, I mean tolio." Well, she doesn't want to argue, so she just says, "Okay, whatever." And they keep going at it. And next thing you know, he's pulling off his boxers. And she looks at him. She goes, "Oh, don't tell me. Smallpox."
The truth is, just because someone desires you,
come back, I still need you,
does not mean that they value you.
Today's word of the day is
Elan.
Definition: energy, style, and enthusiasm.
What are you playing this game for? What's your passion? What's your drive? What's your purpose? What's your purpose for playing this game? Why are you doing what you're doing?
If y'all gonna be great on that field, you gotta have a why. You gotta have a reason for why you do what you do.
You are phenomenal. You are beyond measure. I need you to act like it. No alarm clock needed. My passion wakes me up. I ain't used the clock in 20 years. My passion wakes me up. My drive wakes me up. My determination wakes me up. My ability to be, do, and have whatever I want, it wakes me up. What wakes you up? What drives you? Why are you playing this game? Is it just a game? Or do you eat it? Do you sleep it? Do you drink it? Have you possessed the game? I ain't about to miss this opportunity. I'm about to get everything I got. And I will know if I don't get another gig, it won't have anything to do with the fact that I done put everything on the field.
You have to want to work. You never get better if you're not willing to put in the time.
Most people think, well, I'll be successful if something happens. I'll be successful if I win the lottery ticket. Look, you're not going to be successful if you don't demand it. If you literally don't stake a claim to it and say, this is mine, it's important, you're not going to have it.
People need to know you for one major thing first. He works. He produces. The guy's there every day. The guy's pushing and shoving. Because the truth is, no matter how good your ideas are, how good your art is, or how good your skill set is, if you're not working, man, if you're not vibrating at a frequency that people say, my God, how does that guy do all that? 10X levels, massive action, tremendous work ethic that's just a muscle now, and it's just a discipline in your life, and it's a normal way, you're not going to get in that top 10%.
Success is your duty. It is your obligation and your responsibility.
A person with passion always stands out. The world is so full of average that once you have passion and a sense of energy in your life, it distinguishes you. When you're passionate about something, it isn't reasonable, but you do it anyway. Passion will take you where nothing else will ever take you. It'll give you that decided edge. It'll help you to stand out.
You gotta love it. It's gotta be what you are supposed to do. You wanna sing, and even though they wanna invite you to Carnegie Hall, you're gonna sing to anybody that listens to you, including singing to yourself. You gotta write, even if no one published your book, write, because that was given to you to do. You do what it is you're supposed to. You're supposed to build something. You're supposed to create something. I don't know how to do it. Learn. Do whatever is required. It's you. It's on you. You got to make that happen. Nobody's going to bring it to you on a silver platter and say, here's your dream manifested. No, it's hard. Yes, it's hard. It's difficult. Yes, right. And it's worth it.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A rare earthquake struck in New Jersey, jolting the region. The 4.8 magnitude quake centered an hour outside New York City. No major damage reported, but was felt as far away as Pennsylvania. ABC's Sherry Preston is in Essex County, New Jersey.
The word all across the New York City area on Friday was, did you feel it? A steady rumbling that started around 10:30 in the morning local time and lasted for about 5 or 6 seconds. The U.S. Geological Survey says the epicenter of the 4.8 magnitude tremor was in White Whitehall Station, New Jersey, in the central part of the state. In New York City, no word of any damage to the subways, which kept on operating, but Newark, LaGuardia, and JFK airports all moved into a ground stop so runways could be checked out, and the Holland Tunnel was closed for inspection.
Aftershocks are also expected. The White House says President Biden has been briefed on the earthquake. He travels to Baltimore this afternoon, where he'll get a firsthand look at the collapsed Key Bridge after a cargo ship ran into it last week. A day after the president spoke to Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the deaths of 7 aid workers from Israeli airstrikes in Gaza, changes already being implemented to boost food aid into Gaza and protect civilians. Part of the conditions the president said must happen for the U.S. to continue supporting Israel's war against Hamas.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu never releasing a readout of his call with President Biden, indicating it was a tough conversation. The White House says Biden warned U.S. policy on the Gaza war could change if Netanyahu did not boost humanitarian aid and better protect civilians. Hours later, Netanyahu announcing Israel will accept aid at its southern Ashdod port and will for the first time open its Erez land crossing directly into northern Gaza. Jordana Miller, ABC News, Jerusalem.
A better than expected jobs report in March. The Bureau of Labor Statistics shows 303,000 jobs added last month. You're listening to ABC News. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is in China for the second time in less than a year. She's urging more cooperation between the U.S. and China and warning Chinese manufacturers of the risks of exporting too many goods.
Building a healthy economic relationship requires a level playing field for American workers and firms and open and direct communication on areas where we disagree.
Yellen is in China until Tuesday. A major recovery operation in Taiwan, as officials say they may not be able to rescue people stranded by the earthquake until Sunday. More than 600 people are stranded. 10 have died. Aid is being airlifted to those who still need to be rescued. Tragedy in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, after a crane collapses.
A construction worker who fell with the crane was killed. 3 people on the ground suffered minor injuries. Mark Serson was inside that Tesla.
It hit the front of my car. It was like slow motion. I couldn't believe that I was still alive.
At the time, officials say the operator was in the process of hoisting a piece of the crane to the top of a nearby building under construction.
ABC's Derek Dennis. An environmental group in Austria is warning that if current trends continue, Austria will be glacier-free in 40 years. The country, nestled in the European Alps, has about 93 glaciers, and members of the Austrian Alpine Club said that all but one receded this past year. I'm Michelle Franz in ABC News.
The following program can be heard across platforms such as Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And with that being said, the Ace of Alone Show starts right now.
Step I've ever taken in the wrong direction helped me get to where I am today and led to monumental moments in my life that I would not have got.
Yeah, my name is Dennis Fagan. I run the security for World Wrestling, and one of our wrestlers that lives down there is missing.
Okay, what's his name?
Chris Benoit.
Chris Benoit was considered by many of us in the business as being one of the greatest workers in wrestling.
He was nicknamed the Rabid Wolverine, the Canadian Crippler.
They tried to reach his wife, Nancy. She doesn't answer. They tried to call his house.
I plan on wrestling world.
She was in love, more in love than I'd ever seen her in my life.
This was during Chris and Nancy's wedding. Daniel was the best man, of course.
All right, we'll go ahead and send somebody out there to check on it.
Well, the wrestling world in shock today. Former champion Chris Benoit found dead in his Atlanta home along with his wife and young son. Police now treating the discovery as a double murder-suicide.
On June 25th, 2007, Chris Benoit's brutal murder of his wife and son dominated the news cycle, leaving the world searching for answers.
Going over it in my mind, like, why did this happen? How did it happen? Could have been stopped.
Authorities say Benoit strangled his wife and suffocated his son before hanging himself in their home.
The term that's been being thrown around everywhere is roid rage.
When you look at Christopher Benoit's brain, it is in fact shocking.
For over a decade, those closest to the killings have been left traumatized and desperate for closure. For the first time, friends and family have come together to tell the story in their own words.
Chris was just this gentle giant, and I could never have imagined that he could hurt someone.
He was probably the greatest wrestler that's ever lived. And to have that same person have murdered your family, that's not an easy statement for me to make.
That's not the Chris that I knew. There's so many details that are so crazy to understand.
I need to talk about this. If you don't want to hear it, if you're going to give me shit about it later and say I'm glorifying a murder, stop listening now.
Can you tell us who you are?
I'm David Benoit, son of Chris Benoit. He's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, I believe. That was just his job. As soon as he got off the road, he was just that. That was it, no matter what. My grandfather took him to his very first show in Edmonton. And then he saw the Dynamite Kid.
I guess the Dynamite Kid, also 214 from Liverpool.
Oh. And then he's like, yep, that's what I want to do. My dad, he looked up to him. That was his idol. He emulated him. His work ethic, nothing like it. And then he would do his signature flying headbutt. He would climb up to the top rope, jump off spread eagle, and connect. Busted his ass in the ring every single night. Gave it 120%, no matter what. I got my very first Nintendo, and I had WCW Mayhem, and I played as him.
Chris Benoit was on the radar as a pro wrestler since, gosh, the 80s. I'm Jim Ross, got in wrestling in 1974. I'm now the senior advisor to AEW. I'm a wrestling fan, so if you're a wrestling fan, how could you not be a fan of Chris Benoit's work? He's always considered one of the best workers ever, even when he's young. He was just a natural.
My name is Chris Jericho. I've been wrestling for a long time, almost 30 years. Watching Chris Benoit was one of the reasons why I really enjoyed Stampede Wrestling and why I started really thinking, maybe I can do this.
Benoit's a rookie, but he does have the moves.
To watch Stampede Wrestling, you could tell that the guys were smaller guys. They were not as tall as the giants that you could find in the WWF. I thought, wow, like, they're kind of my size. So in that aspect, someone like Chris Benoit was kind of an early influence on me. The most intense and believable performer I've ever been in the ring with. He could see things that would happen before they happened. His first job was wrestling, and his last job was wrestling. All he ever did was wrestling. The only thing he ever got a paycheck from was wrestling.
I was a huge fan of Chris Benoit right off the get-go. He's the ultimate performer, the Malenko. I wrestled for ECW, WCW, and, of course, WWF/WWE. Chris is very quiet, very reserved, you know, very serious guy, and kind of like into his own little world at times, but when that red light went on and that bell rang, Chris Benoit was a whole other person. Extremely focused, probably one of the most focused individuals I've ever seen in any sport for that matter. Chris took nothing less than being perfect.
I did a few tours with Benoit over in Japan, and we had a match. I gave him a spin kick, and I didn't hit him in the head with it, nor should you. It's wrestling. You work together to put on a show. He felt like he took it the wrong way. He felt that he exposed the business with his ineptitude. Meanwhile, I bet you nobody noticed anything because a quick kick goes by. You take a bump. It's not on TV. Who cares? He cared. Found him in the back doing hack squats, like Hindu squats, where you just go up and down, one, two. And I go, what's wrong? He's like, oh, I messed up that kick, and, you know, I have to do squats now. I'm like, why? Who told you to do squats? Like, are you in trouble? Like, no, I'm just doing them on my own. I screwed up. I'm doing 500 squats. That was him. It's like he had to purge himself and punish himself for making this minor mistake that to him was everything. And Eddie was like that too.
Wrestling fans, of course, all know who Eddie Guerrero is. To many in the wrestling world, he's considered as one of the absolute best wrestlers of all time. I'm Chavo Guerrero Jr., third-generation professional wrestler from the legendary Guerrero family. When Eddie was about 18, he started really training for wrestling, started wrestling all over Mexico, and then transitioned to Japan and became one of their top stars and was called Black Tiger.
He was this tall Mexican guy with long hair and cowboy boots and pants that were tight, and I loved his ass, and I thought he was the most gorgeous guy. My name is Vicky Guerrero. I am a former WWE superstar, and I fell in love with Eddie. He loved wrestling. He ate it. He dreamt it. He was always doing promos in the bathroom mirror. He was always showing me, hey, can I try this move on you and tell me if it hurts? Those were kind of fun days in the bed. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Those were good times.
Super nice, very friendly, would give you the shirt off his back, like literally, like you could just tell the sweetness just exuded from this guy. A little bit crazy, as any wrestler can be, especially from that generation. Very small, though. When we were in Japan, the referee, Hattori, used to call him the Mexican Flamingo. Big, big upper body, small leg.
I think Chris and Eddie first met in Japan, if I'm not mistaken.
They beat the shit out of each other, almost like they owed each other a lot of money.
Eddie would call me and be like, man, I can't stand this asshole. Like, he's such a prick, and, you know, I can't believe I have to work with him for the next week or two.
I think even in today's world of wrestling, every company out there, they all go back and watch those matches. Those guys were, like, way ahead of the time.
I really wanted to be like those guys. You know, that's why my name was Lionheart for so long.
Lionheart!
Because I wanted to be an animal like those guys. Eddie was Black Tiger. Chris was Pegasus Kid, Wild Pegasus. Those two just saw things differently. And that was part of what made them so fucking great.
The more they fought, I think the more that they started, you know, respecting each other, they hit it off. And they ended up just, you know, being the best of friends.
These particular earrings are a pair that my sister wore as a woman on WCW. I decided that I would wear what she thought would look good on camera.
My name is Sandra Toffoloni, and I am the only sibling of Nancy Benoit. My sister Nancy just married right out of high school. Her first husband was a huge wrestling fan and got her to going to the matches, and she really liked it. There was a moment where, I don't know if it was a promoter or another manager that picked her out of the crowd. You know, she's a beautiful woman. The first time it was just kind of like a weekend thing. And then it turned into something else. She met Kevin Sullivan in Florida Championship Wrestling.
Hey, let me tell you something.
He's probably one of the greatest promoters and bookers that's ever worked in wrestling.
Kevin Sullivan, who was this satanic character, and he was satanic because he shaved an X into his chest hair and put makeup on, you know. That was about the extent of his Satanism, you know. He wore a hood.
And they had an instant connection as friends, and then not shortly after that were falling in love. She was already in the process of divorcing her first husband. So Kevin, he had this idea in his head to grow this gimmick of he's the Prince of Darkness, and he has this army of darkness behind him, and Nancy by his side as the fallen angel.
Welcome to Polynesian Pro Wrestling. I'm Angel, your co-host, and here's my master, Kevin Sullivan.
You know, Angel, you've done a fine job.
The name Fallen Angel came from the Uriah Heep album. And the cover of it had this beautiful woman in a leatherish bikini with feathers and a sword. And she looked at that cover and said, man, that's the gimmick.
She's good at what she did. Probably one of the first that really understood the art of being a valet or a second, so to speak. She's an instrumental part in getting heat, as we like to say.
People would stop her. They recognized her. They believed she was possessed. She would get in gas and they would come over and like, we're just gonna lay hands on you and pray for your soul. And she loved it because she knew if they hate me, I'm absolutely doing my job.
Because she wasn't a wrestler, but she was very valuable as a ringside performer. And that's a lost art. Now there's no such thing, right? Every girl in the business has to be a wrestler. She wasn't that, but she probably knew the business better than most.
She did Kevin's makeup. She did her own makeup. She did everything, the hair, the staging, the clothes. The guys would break their tights. Nancy would be there with thread and needle. We had duffel bags full of boa constrictors all around the house.
In the beginning, how would you describe their dynamic, like what they saw like in each other, do you think?
Nancy and Kevin's?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, he worshipped her, and she was all in with him. She was in love, and their dynamic was awesome. So they moved to WCW. It was a big step up, obviously, so from what they were doing.
WCW, where the big boys play.
Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, and Eddie Guerrero were the three amigos. All three of them came to WCW together.
What did they call this guy up north, the Canadian Crippler?
Oh, my goodness! Did you see that?
Kevin was a booker at the time, booking productions, booking talent for storylines. Everyone kept talking about this really great technical wrestler that was coming out. I knew he was new to the company, and I know that my brother-in-law wanted to book him.
I just knew Nancy is the fallen angel character. Then getting to WCW, she was woman.
I am woman. So men, look at it, wish you had it, and eat your heart out. Woman was the one character she was attached to because it was most like her actual personality.
I'm gonna watch your every move, Ric Flair. I'll see you at the Clash, big boy.
She's independent, she takes nothing from anyone, and gotta help you if you get in her way.
Ow!
This one's for you.
Whoa. I know Kevin really, really liked Chris, really enjoyed working with him. And at that time, Kevin was booking Chris and himself into matches, and Nancy kind of became a part of it. Things were kind of happening a little weird, but nobody really knew what was going on.
Kevin Sullivan, it started out as you and I, and then you brought Nancy into it.
The joke in the business is that always that Kevin Sullivan booked his own divorce. It's funny to a point, and then it's kind of not funny at all, because I'm certain that it was not meant to happen.
Starting in WCW, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, who all came in together, they loved it. They were happy when they were, you know, getting some props. Because even them being smaller in a sense, they were the workhorses. You could always count on them.
Benoit takes flight. He is on target with a swan dive.
So Kevin Sullivan, the booker, the story maker, writes the story and has this idea to have woman, who was Nancy, leave Kevin's side and start going with Kevin's arch rival, who is Chris Benoit.
What's it feel like losing the most important thing that you ever had?
WCW would film vignettes with Chris and Nancy being intimate together.
I'll tell you what, it sure feels great gaining it.
What they didn't plan for is that that really happened. Nancy left Kevin Sullivan to go with Chris Benoit.
Kevin was used to her always being there and kind of being his right-hand person. And with her focusing on her own career, I think there were strains there. There were a couple of physical altercations in the house, fights that escalated.
Nancy would reach out to Chris whenever she would have a bad night with Kevin. And Chris was her safe haven, you know, where she would go, wherever he was at.
Chris was going through problems with his wife at the time, so two people kind of gravitating toward each other because they're, you know, having difficulties.
So I got a call from my husband telling me that Nancy has had some problems and could I help her? I was working in a psychiatrist's office and Chris brought her in to see me and she came in and removed her sunglasses and she had a huge black eye. She told me Kevin had done that to her. And I just told her that I'm help you in any way we can. We need to document this. I was really hoping to try to help her get out of that abusive relationship. I just saw it as being this going to blow up.
Bash at the Beach was in Daytona Beach at the Ocean Center. It was Kevin Sullivan going against Chris. It was a great match, I thought. So it looked super realistic. And then at one point, Chris and Kevin started exchanging blows. Chris hit Kevin really hard on the side of the head, and it broke his eardrum. The match ended, but the fight continued backstage. And I was called out to go backstage. I started to walk towards Kevin, and Chris is like, no, don't do that. And Kevin's yelling from the other end of the hallway, come on, come with me, we're leaving. Chris handed me the phone, and it was my sister on the other end. She's like, Sandra, get out of there. Come home. Come to the condo. Just go with Chris. Do not go with Kevin. And I always do what my sister says, so that's what I did. No explanation needed. I went to the condo. My sister came out to talk to me, and she was visibly, physically hurt. She explained to me that her injuries were from Kevin and that Chris had helped her and that she was leaving Kevin. I told her she had to. Chris was a nice person, and all I knew about him was that he helped my sister in a time that she really needed it. So for that, he instantly had my thanks and my admiration. And she was in love, more in love than I'd ever seen her in my life.
The way they looked at each other, we're like, oh yeah, it's gonna work. And Nancy and I became master friends.
Chris decided that he wanted to push his career forward a little bit. And then she just really, really, really wanted to focus on building the house and starting a family. And then all of a sudden, Daniel was born. I've never seen Chris so beyond himself, just excited.
This is my favorite page because this was during Chris and Nancy's wedding, and Daniel was the best man, of course. This is the love that Chris and Nancy always had. And then here's them feeding Daniel after they got married. And Nancy being the princess that she was. And David was there too, Chris's oldest.
David is the son of Chris Benoit from Chris's first marriage.
Nancy, she treated me like I was her own kid. We didn't use the word step in our family, you know. We were family. We went and had fun, went to Chuck E. Cheese with Daniel and Nancy, and, you know, it was good times.
This is my very favorite photo of David and Daniel. It's flipping adorable. I mean, that's what siblings are. You hang on to one another and hope for the best for each other.
You look up to me, you know? I loved him. I protected him. We wanted to be tag team champions. That's what we wanted to do. Be the tag team champions of the world together.
So in WCW, there was definitely a ceiling that you would reach.
The bigger guys were getting all the TV spotlights. If you weren't like 7 foot tall and huge muscles, you know, you didn't get the main event.
Chris was getting a little irritated about the situation with happening at WCW at the time and never seeing herself in a main event spot because we kept getting pushed down. So we decided to take a walk.
I cannot believe this. Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko on WWF Raw.
They walked out. WWF picked him up in 1 second, and the rest is history.
And Benoit on top, have good time, oh my God!
When all three of them got to WWE, then you really saw the strengths.
I lie, I cheat, I steal!
Their intelligence for the business and their view of the business and seeing, like, we see this, they saw this. Eddie became one of the best characters of all time, as well as being one of the best in-ring champions. And Benoit became just this killer, you know, no-nonsense Clint Eastwood performer. It was like Dirty Harry. Go ahead, make my day.
Benoit, he's a rabid Wolverine. I'm telling you, Chris Benoit
Chris Benoit's been a man of honor for years. It was only a matter that he was too short. Perceived as too short. Imagine that.
Benoit's a magnificent, extraordinary athlete.
I always thought, man, getting Benoit here, it's going to create these great matchups. And it did. It was a no-brainer.
But also, Chris was always very much a great father, you know, very much about his family. His kids were always high up on his list.
When Daniel got a little older, Chris would bring him to the ring. And of course, anytime when Chris brought the kids around, we'd all play with them.
It really pained him when he had to miss certain things. I remember at one point, I said something along the lines of, like, I gotta be home on Halloween. And he's like, oh man, I wish I could go home for Halloween, but I gotta work. And I miss Father's Day too. And like, I was like, dude, we'll just get those days off. And it's almost like he didn't want to ask for days off. Because, you know, sacrificing for his art, I guess you would say. And there's a similarity between Chris and Eddie in that both of them sacrificed a lot for their art. Chris and Eddie basically gave their life for pro wrestling.
For Eddie, wrestling was everything. God was first, and then family and wrestling were a close second.
You know, sometimes we'd be in the locker room and Eddie's naked in the locker room reading scripture to other wrestlers and telling them about God.
Chris wasn't religious at all, and Eddie was the one that started introducing him about God. And Chris was very receptive, and he always listened to Eddie. And Eddie had even given him a Bible one Christmas. And Chris always had that on him, and that was something that meant a lot to Eddie. To always be a witness to Chris, you know, and to help him try to find his higher power.
Chris is very quiet, very reserved, and it took a while for him to trust somebody.
Eddie would be his go-to guide. He'd go and talk to him about certain things, you know, whether it be marriage problems or family or professional problems. They'd always confide in each other, and that's what their friendship was. And I know that Chris didn't have that with a lot of people.
Chris, he was blowing up. He was getting bigger as a wrestler. And to have Nancy behind him, he was really happy. She was the driving force and motivation, sort of taking care of everything else that wasn't related to wrestling. She wanted him to be happy and to be successful and to be with his best friend.
Eddie was injured a lot. He had a lot of pain, a lot of injuries that, you know, he couldn't get operations for.
Eddie Guerrero is legal.
And as a wrestler, you never say that you need time off, because as soon as you're off TV for 4 or 6 months, you know, someone else is going to come and replace you. And that was something that was always in Eddie's mind, you know, is like, I can't stop now.
I think Eddie Guerrero is seriously hurt.
Everything he did was wrestling, even to the point where I know he was in a lot of pain, but he still wanted to wrestle. That's what he does. That's what he did. That's who he was. And there was also a lot of, I mean, let's be honest, we're adults, we all did the same shit. There's a lot of drinking, there's a lot of drugs.
But the more that Eddie was trying to hide his injuries with the drugs and the alcohol, it was just getting into a downward spiral.
You know, I saw Chris several different times and make sure that Eddie was tucked in bed okay, you know, and put on his side so he wouldn't throw up on himself. But then Eddie started getting DUIs, and crashing his car, and, you know, having overdose problems.
There was 3 ODs that Eddie did in our house. The first 2, I called the ambulance. And all they did was release him the next afternoon. They just sent him home. The 3rd time, I just let him lay there. I actually left and took the girls to school and just told God, if you're going to take him, just take him now, because it was a bad place in my life.
A lot of wrestlers were dying from substance abuse issues. And but in the back of your mind, always, you're like, man, is Eddie going to be one of those? Is he going to be a statistic?
Eddie showed up to work high one day where he was in bad shape. And I think that when they saw that and Eddie couldn't perform, that's when they said, we're going to go ahead and let you go. He called me and said, well, I got fired. I finally was like, well, thank God. I mean, because now the worst that could ever be imagined is happening.
They sent him to rehab, lost everything, and had to go from the depths of hell and work his way up the system again.
Little by little, he started changing his life to get clean.
After that, his wife came back, his family came back, his life came back.
And that's where Eddie got rehired from WWE, and things were great. He was in the best shape.
WrestleMania 20, the fans knew the history of Eddie and Chris. So the night in New York, it's the right time for both of these guys.
Me and Nancy were watching from the skybox. We were jittery and we were nervous and we were excited and we were stressed too because we didn't know, you know, if they were going to win or what the outcome was.
Just happened. Wait a minute. The bullet flying. It came off. Look at this.
When Eddie won, it was pure joy.
Benoit brought up to the top.
See my dad in the ring? He was my hero. I remember like yesterday, man. Jumped up after he won the belt.
Nancy and I were crying and the girls were excited. And of course you see the confetti and you know all the fans just on their feet.
And then I got to see Eddie Guerrero go out there, best friend. What a moment. I'll never forget that.
And that's why that's one of the best moments in not just wrestling history, I think TV history. It was the happy storybook ending of WrestleMania.
You know, thank God the office finally saw those guys for what they were.
It was my favorite time, my favorite match. I wish those two just retired right after that, to be honest with you.
I have never, ever seen a closer relationship or friendship between two wrestlers as I did between Chris and Eddie. It was an actual, real, no bullshit, out of the ring, caring relationship.
So there's a super show in Minneapolis. We got a flight to Minneapolis. It's a few hours. So Eddie's sitting there talking to me, and then he kind of passes out, sleeps. And I'm like, well, I didn't know that this had been happening to Eddie. He started talking to people and passed out in the middle of a sentence. So we get off the plane in Minneapolis, check into our hotel that we always go to, and we had seen Chris in the lobby also. Say, I'll see you down in the morning. Okay. 7 o'clock, and we're going to go work out. It's set. You know, three of us together, this is the way it was. Eddie goes to his room. I go to my room. Next morning, I get a call about 5:30. It's the front desk. Something's wrong with your uncle. What do you mean something's wrong with my uncle? So I get a knock on my door, security guard, and he's taking me to Eddie's room. I go, what's going on? He goes, well, your uncle didn't answer his wake-up call. So we came to his room and knocked. No answer. With the latch on, that means someone's in here. So they cut the latch off. I walk in and I look in the bathroom and I see Eddie face down. He's in his underwear. His toothbrush was in his hand. I grab him. I kind of try to shake him and he's moving and I hear him gurgling like... And I'm like, Eddie, wiping his face. And he's like, he's still there, man. And he's, we're trying. And then all of a sudden he's in my arms and he's not there anymore. He passed in my arms, like literally, hold on. I haven't been to this moment in a long time. Then I get a call from Chris. And Chris goes, hey, man, I'm downstairs. Where are you? Hey, man, are you sitting down? He goes, yeah. And I go, Eddie passed away this morning. And all you hear is from a guy with no emotion whatsoever. You hear a wail. Just this wail from deep down, like a heartbreak
If you've ever heard one, this was a heartbreaking.
Then Vince called me. And he said, "Go, Vicky." And he's just crying. I'm just like, I go, "Is it true?" And he's passed away. And he said, "I'm sorry."
Chris went over there and kind of knelt down and just steady on the forehead. I went over there and, you know, kind of like the same thing. And it was hard. I mean, here's your buddy that you've been with for 8-10 years, every day pretty much.
And there wasn't really any sign that obviously he had relapsed.
He didn't relapse. The verdict was heart disease at 38.
I remember the day that my sister called me hysterical. I couldn't even understand her. You need to take some breaths and you need to tell me what's going on, because she couldn't even get the words out. And when she told me, I burst into tears. And I thought about the kids and Vicky, really, you know, just a flash in my head. And then my next thought was, oh my God, Chris.
Eddie Guerrero has passed away.
The tribute that WWE did, it couldn't have been any better. Yeah, the whole stage was filled with everyone from backstage. But all I could remember was Chris. He was just crying.
Now we know that I love you. I miss you.
One by one, they took different talent that wanted to talk about Eddie and his passing and his life. And Chris did it, which is probably really difficult to do. Chris had a hard time getting through it.
I want to thank you from my heart and tell you that I love you and I'll never forget you. And I will see each other again. I love you, Eddie.
I believe it was very hard for him, you know. I even cried after for him.
Funerals are never good, but Eddie's funeral was very hard. When I saw Benoit, he came and gave me a hug. But it was like the most desperate, saddest, I'm hanging on for dear life hug that you could ever get. Sobbing, deep, hitching sobs, and leaving literally a patch of wetness on the shoulder of my suit that soaked through to the shirt, went through the jacket and the shirt of tears.
I'd never seen Chris show emotion before. You know, of course it affected all of us, but I just think it affected Chris just like so much more. It affected Chris like a spouse or something.
When Eddie passed away, not only did it end Chris and Eddie's relationship, in a lot of ways it kind of ended mine with him too. I think he just became more and more of a hermit and didn't want to see people that he knew. I remember seeing him at Eddie's funeral, and the WWE guys had to leave right after the funeral to fly to Europe. You have Chris, who has this horrible damage done to him, where he's crying, sobbing, the lowest point of his life, and as soon as the funeral's done, he goes on a plane and flies to Europe to wrestle. I didn't get that. You know, I thought if there's ever a time to take some time off, or to give someone some time off, I think Chris needed to be away from stuff for a while, but I think he just continued on because he didn't know what else to do. He didn't handle it well. Let me just say it like that.
I was in bed like for the first week after we buried Eddie, and Nancy was the first one at the house, and she helped me with everything. I mean, she was the one who was making sure that the kids were fed. And finally, she just like walked in my room and she's like, "Enough." She goes, "Enough. Get up and shower. Get up because you have two girls that still love you and they need you." And I didn't want to do anything. And she threw me in the shower. She got the girls dressed. And she goes, "We're going to lunch." She was my angel in so many ways.
She just immediately went into planning mode. "I'm going to help with this and I'm going to do that." And I mean, that was her knee-jerk reaction to grief and heartache. But Chris locked down.
And Nancy stayed with me for a month after Eddie passed away. And Chris would come in when they were off. And I would find Chris on Eddie's side of his bed. and Chris would just be laying there crying, holding Eddie's pillow. Eddie had a beautiful gym upstairs, and I would go upstairs, and the girls would come down, and they would say, "Mom, Chris is crying again." And I would go to the gym, and Chris would just be sitting on the bench, just crying. He goes, "I'm lost without Eddie being here." To see him just crying in my arms, it was very emotional. Here's this big, strong man who is tough and quiet and strong. He broke my heart. You know, but then you see Chris, you know, around the other wrestlers or in a meeting, and he had his face on. So professional, like you wouldn't even think that anything was bothering him. But Chris was getting more and more distant, where he was not being seen as much backstage, you know, where I couldn't find him. Like Nancy would call me and be like, "How's Chris doing today?" And I said, "Well, I haven't seen him."
She talked to me about it several times. She was like, "There's something going on, and I don't know what it is. You gotta tell me if you notice something." And I was like, "Yeah, there's something up." He just seemed different. He was talking more about other wrestlers that had had children kidnapped and fans that went sideways and were violent. He used to take different cars and different ways to the gym that we had been going to for years. It was super random. He just didn't want to be places and be seen. There was a level of paranoia we had never, ever seen before.
Nancy started getting really worried. She's like, "I'm really worried for Chris. This is really affecting him in so many ways." He was just sad all the time and depressed. He was impatient. There was a lot of fighting going on for reasons that she didn't understand why he would be upset. And she would just be like, "Life is just really hard right now. Like, Chris is just irritable and he doesn't want to talk to me. He's mad all the time." You know, he was just mad at life in general.
There were a few months where he completely closed off, not really even talking to Nancy, not really talking to anyone. So we got Chris a journal so that he could write to Eddie. I think that after we got him that journal is when he started opening up a little bit more. Because writing to him, he started feeling like maybe Eddie was with him in spirit or in heart by just being able to talk to him every day.
Was there any point when Nancy wanted Chris to maybe step away from wrestling at all?
That last year. She didn't think that it was healthy physically or mentally for him to be on the road and doing so much work in the same places that he and his best friend used to be and do things together.
I remember talking to him and he's like, "Every building I go to, all I can do is think of Eddie. Okay, we're in Kansas City. Last time I was here, Eddie was here. And now we're in New Mexico. Last time I was here, Eddie was here." I think all of those things were kind of signs that something really serious was going on with him.
He was so grief-stricken on a monumental level that she thought that staying in the company and staying in the business was going to eventually harm his well-being.
It's Saturday night. I'm going to go into Laredo, Texas. We're doing the Texas Loop. I get to Laredo, and Chris, myself, and Scott Armstrong are going to ride together. And then later, I get a call from Chris, and he goes, "Oh, man, I'm not going to make it." I go, "What's wrong?" He goes, "Daniel and Nancy have food poisoning, and I'm just trying to take care of them." And I'm like, "Oh, man, are you good? You're right?" And he's like, yeah, I'm okay. I said, "Well, tomorrow we're in Houston for the pay-per-view." So he goes, okay, great. I said, "Okay, man." And he goes, Chavo. I go, "Yeah?" And he goes, "I love you." And I'm like, "Okay, brother, I love you too, man." That was weird. And I go, "Are you okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm okay, man. I'm just really tired." And I said, "Okay, man. Okay, well, you can call me if you need to get any problem." "Okay, well, I will." So then, that's it. About 5:30 in the morning, I get a text, and it was from Chris's phone, and it said, "The dogs are in the enclosed pool area, and the back door is open." So I'm half asleep, and I see this text, and I'm like, "The heck is that?" All of a sudden, 30 seconds later, I get another text from Nancy's phone, and it says the exact same thing. I was like, "What? That's weird." I get another text right afterwards. It tells me his physical address. What is that? So I disregard it, thinking I'm picking Chris up in 3 hours at the airport. So then, yeah, I meet Scott downstairs. We go get breakfast, and I talk to him. I go, hey, man, did you get a weird text from Chris? And he goes, yeah, I did. I said, what did it say? And he said the exact same thing. We drive to Corpus Christi for the next show. Still no word from Chris. So the head of talent relations, Johnny Ace, asked me, hey, Chavo, have you heard from Chris? And I said, no. I said, but look, Johnny, and I bring up my phone and I show him. These are the texts that I got from Chris yesterday. And Johnny, in his raspy voice, is like, Chavo, why didn't you show us these yesterday? And I'm like, look, man, we were covering for Chris. We didn't know where he was. You didn't know where he was.
The office is starting to get concerned because it was getting to be like 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So Vince McMahon has sent a wellness check to his house.
My name is Dennis Fagan. I run the security for World Wrestling, and one of our wrestlers that lives down there is missing. We need a welfare check done.
And what's his name?
Chris Benoit. It's spelled B-E-N-O-I-T.
Okay, and he's a wrestler.
So this man calls a meeting at the ring.
Dean Malenko's sitting next to me. I just had this really bad feeling. Dean's like, there's something wrong. Something is not right.
That's when Vince McMahon stands up in the ring and says, we've just got word that Chris Benoit, Nancy, and Daniel have all passed away. And the gasps, of course, around the ring.
I remember Vicky Cassie just let out this hurling scream.
I freaked out and I started crying, and Dean kind of stood up and he grabbed my hand and he took me off to the back.
So then Vince is backstage, and I walk up to Vince, and I said, what happened? And I'm a little frantic, and he says, they're gone. I said, what do you mean they're gone? And he hugs me super tight, and my head's on his shoulder, like, crying to Vince, like, no, like, what happened? I don't understand. Nobody understood, because no one knew the details yet.
I didn't know what was going on, but I'd heard enough to know that something's not right. If you would have lined up 100 people against the wall, I said, name one that's going to kill his family. How can this be? Like, how could he have done this? He fooled us all.
I went from just being a regular welfare check. Okay, we got something more serious here.
And I came out of the theater and I turned my phone on, and I had like 22 missed calls from my parents.
The cop told me that they all passed away over the weekend.
You didn't want to believe it. Can't believe it. Can't be true. But it was.
The act of what he did is unthinkable. Unforgivable.
A rare northeast earthquake. I'm Lisa Brady. It was centered in northern New Jersey near the city of Lebanon, about 45 miles west of New York City, but felt across the region from Philadelphia to Massachusetts. Preliminary magnitude 4.8.
It's part of the Ramapo fault system. It's the longest crack in the Earth's surface on the eastern side of the country. And when earthquakes do happen, as we know, it's very rare. But this is typically been the spot that they have happened.
Fox meteorologist Adam Klotz.
And it was located just half a mile down, which is incredibly shallow as far as these things go, which is why so many people felt it.
What they felt varies. Reports of a slight rumbling to desks and computers shaking. James Pittenger, the mayor of Lebanon, New Jersey, again the epicenter, just telling Fox News there's no word of significant damage.
No reporting so far in Lebanon. I can say in my own garage, you know, going down there, things were knocked out, you know, off the walls, and, you know, everything was all over the floor. So it was, again, something I've never experienced before.
There have been some wider transportation impacts as a precaution, including temporary ground stops at New York's JFK Airport and at Newark Airport in New Jersey. Bridge and tunnel inspections also underway. Getting reports the quake was felt in the clubhouse and on the field at Yankee Stadium, where gates are set to open soon for the home opener. A spokesperson says President Biden has been briefed and the White House is in touch with federal, state, and local officials. The quake also felt at the UN, where a Security Council meeting has been underway on the war in Gaza.
Nothing can justify the collective punishment
of the Palestinian people.
The head of the UN, Antonio Guterres, also says while the Israeli military acknowledged mistakes in the deadly strike on an aid convoy, Israel's policies, he says, allow for more mistakes. He's calling for an independent investigation. America is listening to Fox News. A surprise in the latest jobs report.
The 303,000 new jobs last month were spread across many sectors, but healthcare, hospitality, and government saw the biggest gains.
It's just yet another expectations-defying job report.
White House Council of Economic Advisors Chair Jared Bernstein says the hot jobs market is not fanning inflation worries, he says, because wages are rising faster than prices.
Very important for families at the kitchen table to get some breathing room.
In a statement, President Biden says he's calling on large corporations to pass along record profits to consumers and eliminate so-called junk fees. At the White House, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
The president visits Baltimore today for a first-hand update on salvage updates after last week's deadly bridge collapse. He also plans to meet with family members of the six construction workers who were killed. Four bodies have not been recovered yet. A Wisconsin doctor who sued to protect abortion access and has performed abortions is running for Congress.
Democrat Kristen Lierley launching her candidacy for Wisconsin's 8th congressional district. 2 weeks before Republican Mike Gallagher is set to leave the House seat for a position in the private sector. Lierley was one of the plaintiffs in a Wisconsin lawsuit that succeeded in keeping abortion legal after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. For now, Lierley is unopposed in the conservative district, where two Republicans are running and a third is expected to get into the race next week. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
Recapping our top story, the strongest earthquake to hit northern New Jersey in more than a century. And the 4.8 magnitude quake was felt by millions from Philadelphia to New England. No reports of any major damage or injuries. Wall Street rallying after yesterday's late plunge. Right now, the Dow's up 371. I'm Lisa Brady. This is Fox News.
If you guys enjoyed that episode, do me a favor, leave me a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible, or however many stars you think I deserve, and until next time, I will catch your asses down the road.
Grab a clue, what could that be? They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna keep chasing.
They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna keep chasing.
I think this life could be special if I get rid of the devils. They think that I am a rebel. I think they want me to settle. There's nobody on my left.